So if you look through the readings for this Sunday, the 16th Sunday of Ordinary Time, Year B, there's kind of a thread that kind of runs throughout the readings. And normally, most of the time, the majority of the time, that's what I tend to preach about. And that is the idea of shepherds. So if you go to the first reading from Jeremiah, it's God saying through the prophet Jeremiah, "Woe to the shepherds who mislead and scatter the flock of my pasture." God's not happy with the shepherds of ancient Israel. At this stage in history, the priests of the temple, a lot of the prophets, a lot of the kings were not doing their job, and Israel's being scattered, and they were going over to worship of false gods and so on and so on. And so God says later on, a couple of verses down, "I will appoint shepherds for them who will shepherd them so that they no longer need fear and tremble." Okay, then our responsorial psalm, Psalm 23, the psalm of King David, who himself was a shepherd. And he says, "The Lord is my shepherd, there is nothing I shall want." Here's the first line, the first verse of that psalm, and you've all heard this before. It's a common psalm from funerals. "The Lord is my shepherd, I shall not want, and verdant pastures he gives me repose." Repose. What's the word repose mean? What is this repose that he gives? In English, I mean, there's one of the synonyms for repose is rest. "And verdant pastures, he gives me rest." The Lord is my shepherd. He gives me rest. He brings me to a green pasture and he gives me rest. So bring that forward into the gospel. Now with the gospel, Jesus, this is the continuation from last week. Last week, the gospel was Jesus sent the apostles out. They go preach, they teach, they heal, they anoint people with oil, and they're healed. Last week, I preached about anointing of the sick, but it's this idea of the apostles being sent out. And they come back, and they say, "Jesus, it was awesome. The demons had to listen to us. We cast out demons. We were healing all of these people. We couldn't believe it." So that was last week, and this week follows, picks up right from where we left off there. The apostles gathered together, and they reported all that Jesus had done and taught, and he said to them, "Come away by yourselves to a deserted place and rest a while." Jesus shepherding his flock. And then later on, when the people heard that they were leaving, they were pressing upon us that the people were coming and going in great numbers, and they had no opportunity even to eat. And we've all been there. We've had those moments where it's like, it's go time, and it's just busy, 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 busy. I'll never forget my first day here at St. Peter's. February 1st, my first day, I ate breakfast at 10:30 at night because it was just going, 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 going all day long. And there are those times and there are seasons that that's the way it is. But that is not supposed to be our constant mode of operation. And so when the people hear that Jesus is leaving, they go to the opposite side. They're waiting for them when they get there. And it says, his heart was moved with pity, for they were like sheep without a shepherd. And he shepherds his flock. But what I really want to focus on is this concept of repose, this concept of rest. That even when Jesus, that he sees the vast crowd there. Now, we don't get this context from the gospel per se, but we see Jesus going and teaching, but we can presume that his apostles, he went out to the people, and he's allowing his apostles that place of rest. And this isn't the only time in the gospels where we see Jesus doing this. Over and over and over again, he goes away by a deserted place, either by himself to pray. He gets up early in the morning before sunrise, and he goes by himself to pray, or he takes his apostles with him. This is a common repeated theme. This idea of rest. Where does this come from? It goes all the way back to the very, very, very beginning of Genesis. To the creation story itself. When God, who said, "Let there be light," he created the sun, the moon, the stars, he created the earth, he separated the water from the earth, he allowed plants to grow, he put fish in the sea, and he put birds in the air, and the beasts of the field, and then he created man, and then he rested. God, who is infinite, has an infinite source of power, infinite source of energy, Almighty God himself rested for a day. Why? Because he got tired? No. Because he was setting an example for us. This concept, this pattern of rest. And then skip forward to Moses, given the Ten Commandments. He meets God on the Mount Sinai. He comes down with the Ten Commandments. Here are the 10 most important things that the people of God are supposed to follow. And if I was to give the average, not Christian per se, but go survey 10,000 people in America and ask them what are the 10 most important rules to follow, I guarantee you taking a day of rest wouldn't even make the top 1,000. But it's not just, that's just not what we think about. That's not part of our concept. It's not how we in the 21st century live. Rest is like, yeah, maybe I'll get around to it. But God commands, observe the day of Sabbath. Keep holy the Lord's day. And the way we've reduced that is a very, very, very basic, plain minimalism of just make sure you go to Mass on Sunday. And so you get all these homilies, and I'm guilty of this myself, of just begging, please, please just go to Mass. Please, I'm just begging you, just go to Mass. That's like the bare bones minimum. Just do that. But that is a drop in the bucket compared to what the actual command is to keep holy the Lord's day and to rest. One day a week, we are commanded to rest. So why does this matter? Why is this important? What's the big deal here? Well, the ancients, the desert fathers, in the first 300 years of the church, there's a bunch of desert fathers. So they would go out to the desert and they'd wrestle with the devil in their spiritual lives. And that's where it was the ancient desert fathers where we get the list of what's now known or called the seven deadly sins. You guys have all heard that before. Pride, lust, greed, avarice, But there's one in there that I very, very rarely hear brought to confession. And it actually has to do with this. Today, in English, we call it sloth. Sloth or sloth or laziness. That's the way it's normally interpreted. Just like, yeah, I'm lazy. I don't quite do what I'm supposed to do. But that's not the original understanding or the original word that the Greek or the desert fathers used for that deadly sin. And by the way, they call them the seven demons. It wasn't just sins. They understood them to be demons of these seven deadly things, of pride, lust, greed, gluttony, all that kind of stuff. But they called it the sin of acedia. What? What's that? Probably never even heard the word acedia before. But that is the ancient word for what we now say as a sloth. But what has been reduced, again, it's been very, very narrowed down to laziness of just like, you know, the couch potato. Oh, that's slothfulness. But that's not the way Joseph Pieper had defined acedia. And the ancients understand acedia. Joseph Pieper was a German philosopher. He lived in Germany during World War II. And so he never joined the Nazi guard, and so he lost his job for a while, and he was never killed, but he just kind of kept a low profile. But he survived the Nazi occupation of Germany, and afterwards, in post-World War II, you have this prominent German Catholic philosopher, and he decided to write a book in 1946 or 1947. In the midst of rebuilding after World War II and all the atrocities that saw, he decides that would be the perfect time to write a book called Leisure, the Basis of Culture. Now just imagine trying to tell a bunch of Nazis about leisure. Or tell a bunch of Germans about leisure. Just imagine how well that went over. That's what I'm telling a bunch of Germans about leisure right now. Slow down. It makes me nervous. But this idea of leisure. Now, when we think about leisure, usually what comes to mind is picnics and, you know, vacations or, you know, sitting by a poolside or watching Netflix. But that's not the way Joseph Pieper would define leisure. We define leisure today we understand it, it's like basically, you know, recreation. And recreation can be a part of leisure, but it's not synonymous. Leisure, as Piper defines it, is accepting and receiving reality as it actually is. To accept reality as it actually is. It's a very different definition of leisure. So with leisure, this acceptance of reality, this acceptance of truth, it's a receptive posture. You can't receive something if your fists are closed. If you're already hanging on to something, you can't receive. You have to receive with hands open. It's a receptive posture of leisure. And Joseph Pieper said that the highest form of leisure that we can participate in is liturgy. Because ultimately, what is the truth that happens in liturgy? We recognize He is God and we are not. That is the single greatest truth. He is God and we are not. He creates the rules and I do not. I owe Him everything and He has given me everything. That is what liturgy is supposed to be impressing upon us, deep truth. And Pieper says that even one of the great other great sources of leisure, and you would never, especially if you understand leisure as like, as just simply recreation, one of the greatest sources of leisure, and I preach about this at funerals all the time, is funerals. A funeral can be a great source of leisure, whether you like it or not. Because what happens at a funeral? We are confronted with truth that's hard to acknowledge. That death is final. That this is not our home. That's a truth that a lot of times funerals give us that opportunity to confront that in ways that we'll avoid as much as possible. But leisure is that receiving of truth, receiving of our own identity, receiving of reality. And acedia is the opposite. So if that's the case, if acedia is the refusal to accept your own identity, refusal to accept reality as it is, use that definition, that lens, and look at our society in general. Over and over and over again, you see a flat-out refusal to accept reality or truth. I get to define my truth for myself, and you get to define your truth for yourself, and you can't tell me what is true, and I can't tell you what is true. And if I decide to identify as this or that, if I say that I want to be this or that, then that's simply the way it is. And we define and create our own truth. That, my friends, is an absolute direct result of acedia. That's what that is. Pride is mixed in with there, sure, but it is distinct from pride. But acedia also, it rears its head in a couple of different ways. Acedia, this sloth, this slowness to, like, act, that also rears its ugly head in our spiritual lives as well. Acedia can be two sides of the same coin. It manifests in two different ways. One is through the couch potato, the laziness. And that's where it's usually left at that. Okay, we're lazy. But what about this refusal when you know that there is something that needs to be changed in your life? You know something is off, something is wrong, you keep making the same loop, the same pattern of sin, and you do nothing about it. You ignore it. What do we call that? That is acedia, right? It's a laziness in the spiritual life, maybe I'll get around to it someday. Manifests itself that way, but it also manifests itself on the other side of the same coin that you would think are complete opposites, but they are the same coin. It's both acedia. The other way it manifests itself, get ready for this, buckle up, workaholism. Workaholics. That inability to enter into rest, that inability to enter into, to relax, to let go, to not be doing something all the time. That is acedia. It's the other side of the coin. And so Jesus is his instinct in today's gospel. Hey, we did great. You did great work. Now let's go away. Let's go step aside. We need to go rest. Sunday, the Sabbath, is an antidote to acedia. Rest and being able to take a step back, to be able to give ourselves room to breathe, to step into the silence of an hour of adoration, and to not have to be reading something the whole time, to not have to be just thinking about what's the next thing on my list, to not be thinking about just praying the rosary. And I'm not opposed to praying a rosary or reading during a holy hour. But make no mistake, if your leg is bouncing the whole time during Mass, and you're just like, when can I get out of here? When is this going to be over? When am I done with this holy hour? I can't wait for this hour to end. I got my 60 minutes, and I'm out of here. That is acedia, brothers and sisters. And it manifests itself. It's an inability to rest, to stop, to pause, to slow down, to look inside. And it's not something I don't hear this very often in confession. And again, when it manifests itself in the way of workaholism, we get praised for that. We get rewarded for that. We get paid overtime for that. And on the outside, everyone will look at you and praise you like, look at this guy. He's a hard worker. What a good guy. But it turns out it's actually a vice to not be able to stop, to pause, to unplug, to disconnect, and to rest. Brothers and sisters, what I am proposing to you is actually something incredibly radical, incredibly countercultural. And that is to actually observe the Sabbath. Sunday, the Lord's Day, the holy day, which technically isn't Sabbath. Sabbath is, you know, Saturday for the Jews. But I am proposing to actually treat Sunday differently. To actually stop, pause, shut off your email, shut off the flow of junk that's constantly flooding you, and to rest. And those members of our families who, like, they're the ones who, even when we do unplug and they're constantly doing, and they're doing all the things and they never slow down, that's actually a problem. Especially if you cannot take that and to slow down and to give the Lord time and silence to pause and to pray. The Lord can't speak to us if we do not have silence in our lives. Think of what Mother Teresa of Calcutta said. If you are too busy to pray, you're too busy. I hate the word busyness, and I use it myself. And lest you think I am pointing a finger at you terrible people, I'm telling you, I've written the book on this. I'm exposing my soul right now, because this is my biggest personal battle as well. Is this desire to be seen as a hard worker, drawing my identity from what I do, from what I produce. And so even for me, resting and setting aside time to be actually with the Lord, it's uncomfortable. I'm proposing something radical. To make Sunday a different kind of day. If Sunday is a day where you and your children actually look forward to it, like, oh my gosh, yes, Sunday, I cannot wait for Sunday. And not just the weekend to like veg out and to do it, but Sunday to be refreshed and renewed. If you're not already looking to Sunday that's that way, if it's not already something you're anticipating and looking forward to, you're probably doing Sunday in the Lord's Day wrong. And something should probably be addressed in that. May we step back and allow ourselves to rest with the Lord.